Hi, this is Frank. Thanks so much for returning to Santa Barbara Cyclist. Today, another podcast interview. Let's jump right in. Mike, would you introduce yourself?
Certainly, Frank. My name is Mike Hecker, and I'm kind of a cycling jack of all trades, if you will.
Yes, you are. We're going to talk. We have so many things to talk about, Mike. But if we had to give you a label, right? Everybody wants a label. How would you describe? What's your job description in this biking world we all live in? Well, what title would you give yourself?
I would say I'm just a passionate cyclist who's been part of the world of cycling for 43 years. And I'm an advocate, first and foremost, to get more people on bicycles. And whether that's via my race announcing, which I'm doing a lot more of, or back in the day when I was a race director, people attended the races that I used to do. I've had so many parents come up to me and go, hey, thank you so much for all those races you did at the Dirt Club in Los Olivos. Because of that, my son went to this college or whatever. It's kind of a touching thing to get those type of thank yous from people I don't even know.
You were a racer yourself once upon a time.
I was a racer once upon a time, yes. I started racing bicycles when I was 13 years old. And I started on the road here in the San Ynez Valley, which was kind of a little bit of a funny situation back then in the 80s. You know, cycling wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. And here I was, 13-year-old kid, shaving my legs, attending a local school that had no other cyclists attending it. And oh, it was a really interesting time.
Did you get teased being the only kid?
Oh, I certainly did. I certainly did. I got teased by my peers all the time. They didn't understand. You know, I'd leave on a Friday to go compete somewhere over the weekend, and I'd get back late Monday. Well, where have you been all this time? And, well, you know, I was in Nevada City, California, or I was in Colorado Springs, Colorado, racing my bicycle.
And then it sounded better, too.
Then it sounded a little...
Then it was pretty cool.
Yeah, then they kind of sort of understood what was going on.
Yeah.
But nice. Still.
Nice. And so many directions. We got so much to cover today, Mike. Let's just start. One thing on my mind is how we met. I called you up one day is how I remember it. But in most people don't talk on the phone, especially the first time they make contact. I probably texted you. David Huntsman in Orange County told me about you, and I should reach out to you. How do you know David Huntsman?
I know David pretty much through the road and track cycling scene in Southern California, and his son, Eddie Huntsman, who's a very the kid is really successful so far as a bike racer, and he's making his strides towards becoming a pro. So yeah. Really neat to see.
Yeah. Did you ever race against David? Probably.
Probably raced some mountain bikes against him back in the day and a little bit on the road. Mm-hmm. But I've been in hundreds and hundreds of bicycle races, and I can't remember everything, unfortunately.
Hundreds. Yeah. Right. Mike, you do a lot with children, encouraging children to get on bikes. How did that start, and what are you doing today?
Well, really, how that started is with about 23 years ago, there was a teacher up in Berkeley. His name is Matt Fritchinger, and he started the Berkeley High School mountain bike racing team. It was the only mountain bike racing team that we knew of in the United States at the time, and that slowly snowballed through the Audis into two teams, four teams, eight teams. Then it became the NorCal League. And meanwhile, I'm promoting my Firestone Walker mountain bike race here at the same time. And there's nothing like this in Southern California for our youth. There's no high school racing. There's no middle school racing. So I started at this Firestone Walker race offering a local high school race. And then that snowballed into the SoCal High School League forming. And then the SoCal League needed race venues, so they came to the Dirt Club for the first 10 years of the league, holding an annual Cow Pie Classic SoCal League race at the Dirt Club. And we actually had the privilege there of hosting three different California state championships that took the NorCal League and brought them down here in the SoCal League, and we all met and raced. We had three huge state championship high school mountain bike races at the Dirt Club in Los Olivos, which is a whole nother subject we can talk about.
Wow.
But as for what I'm doing today, I'm the race announcer. I'm the race announcer for the SoCal League. I'm the race day voice of the SoCal League.
Now, I've seen you set up before. The Bike Coalition did a race in Santa Maria, you know, a few years ago, probably 5 years ago. And I saw you come out and you've got all the gear. What does it take to announce, just in terms of stuff you got to bring, microphones like today?
Well, you know, it depends on the event. But like for that event, I think you're thinking of the Windmill Century that was held at the park there outside Orchid. I own an announcing trailer, if you will. It's a Wells cargo trailer. It's 15 feet long. It has some scaffolding that built off the side. So we have a stage for our officials and as the race announcer.
I remember that.
I own a truss, a start-finish truss, which goes up across the start-finish line that you can customize with your event banners and stuff. I own a PA system, a little antiquated. I probably need to upgrade it a little bit, but a PA system that is powerful enough that you can hear miles away.
That's what I was going to say, miles away. If you're running out of gas and you wonder how far the finish line is, you can tell by the sound of your voice.
You're right, totally. I have an iPad with 36 hours of songs on it that have no bad words. It's kind of funny. Think about today's music selection out there. It's hard to find songs like that.
Yeah, yeah. So you can provide the soundtrack for a race too.
Right. Usually I get contracted to provide sound, music, and emceeing the event, starting the races in conjunction with the race officials, following the timeline that the race director gives me, making sure I get all the sponsor plugs in there that they want me to get in, read the scripts they provide me, yada, yada, yada. But the most important thing is that I'm passionate about cycling. I'm passionate about this sport, and that comes across when I'm on the announcing team.
It does. Right. Now, the way I look at it, from my perspective, you had a breakthrough just a couple of years ago in this whole announcing life of yours. Was I just the last one to learn of it, or you started getting a lot of gigs?
Yeah, you know, I first really started out as an assistant to my friend Jason Renoa at the SoCal League back in 2017. He was getting ready to move to Utah and they needed to replace him. So I got in there and worked with him. And then pretty much Team Big Bear brought me on. My friend Tom Spiegel, who I've known back to my racing days, he owns Team Big Bear. And he gave me another opportunity to announce his races. And then COVID hit and there wasn't much going on. Team Big Bear still raced, so I had their events. And then coming out of COVID, I had a big opportunity in that I was offered an opportunity to work the Sea Otter Classic up in Monterey. And this was post-COVID, an October event. Usually that event happens in April, but it happened in October that year. And that was kind of the thing that got my foot in a bunch of other doors. Once I started announcing for the Sea Otter Classic, then other race series called and said, "Hey, are you available? Let's talk."
Well, because Sea Otter, it attracts people from all over.
Yeah, the Lifetime Sea Otter Classic is by far North America's largest competitive cycling event in that they have disciplines across the board. They have downhill, they have dual slalom, they have enduro, they have gravel, they have road, they have mountain. And so when you bring all those disciplines together in one place like Laguna Seca that is now serving as our Interbike, we used to have the Interbike trade show in Anaheim. But that has since gone away. Now, all these vendors, all these industry partners come to Sea Otter, and it's the largest outdoor expo. So you combine the largest outdoor cycling expo and all these cycling disciplines, you get 50, 75,000 people there.
Oh, now, so an expo implies what? You've got bicycle manufacturers, all kinds of gear and gadget and hardware people showing up, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've never been. I would probably like it.
You need to come on out this April.
All right.
I'll get you a VIP pass.
Oh, geez, I'll be there. Great. So, Sea Otter, you mentioned Enduro, and that's a word I'm not exactly sure I know what it means either, Mike. What's an Enduro race?
Well, an Enduro is, it's basically a downhill and an uphill. Okay, so you get your time on your descent, on your race down the hill, and then you're given a certain window of time to ride your bicycle back up to the top of the next stage. And if you're a purist, you know, which I'm not going to proclaim that I'm a purist at all, if you're a purist cross-country guy, you've always kind of said, oh, downhill. You know, these guys just, they aim their bike downhill. They're not athletes, which it couldn't be the furthest from the truth. It takes so much skill and talent to be able, and cardiovascular, to be able to fly your bike down a hill.
Good hand-eye coordination,
right,
to say the least. I watched the, GoPro videos, and I can't believe that these young people, of course, are navigating these downhill mountainous trails.
Yeah. The downhills I raced back in the day were all on fire roads, and we raced them on our hard tails. Mm-hmm. And then we had suspension forks that had like an inch of suspension, mm-hmm. you know, so.
How are things today?
Well, today, you know, these bikes are pretty light, even the gravity bikes. They have 27.5-inch wheels, most of the gravity bikes do, and wider tires, so they have more traction. They're dually suspended, so they have front and rear suspension. Inches, not an inch. 3 inches is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that makes a difference. Because we're racing, people want those advantages.
If the bike is more plush under the rider, you're not being bumped around as much as you were on the hardtails. Mm-hmm. Even cross-country racers, for the most part, are using dual suspension cross-country bikes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what events do you have on your calendar looking into the new year, Mike?
Right now, I've secured contracts with the SoCal League for the 2024 season, so that's 6 races. I'll be announcing Team Big Bear's 7-race calendar, so that's 7 races. So that's another 13 total. And then I have 4 different criteriums in Southern California that want to bring me on. And as of yet, we don't know about USA Cycling or Lifetime, but I see no reason why those contracts won't be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've worked events for USA Cycling. They include the Collegiate Mountain Bike National Championships in Durango, Colorado. I've worked the Marathon Mountain Bike National Championships recently in Auburn, Opelika, Alabama.
Yeah.
Took me all weekend to get Opelika.
It's worth the effort, though, to get it right.
It was worth the effort, yeah, for sure. I've worked regular mountain bike endurance national championships, both in Winter Park and out in Magungie, Pennsylvania this past summer.
Wow. I remember a trip to Arkansas.
Yes. Right? Yes. The Arkansas trips were Ty Cady's UCI US Pro Cup races, and they were held in Fayetteville, Arkansas at Centennial Park, which is a custom-built mountain bike race park funded by the heirs to the Walmart fortune.
I bet that's pretty nice, huh?
Oh, it's a pretty special place. I've done that race twice. Unfortunately, this year it's not going to line up with my calendar with other events that I have, but I'm sure Ty will have me back in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I've been anticipating our time together today. I've just been wondering, what stage in the life cycle is this kind of mountain bike racing? Is it, I mean, you know, in professional sports, we have baseball, basketball, football that are all very mature and super financially successful. Does mountain bike racing have a course that it's on that's going to take it to something bigger than it is today?
Well, I wouldn't just classify it as mountain bike racing. I would say cycling in general is on an upward trajectory to being a financially viable business opportunity for today's athletes. You do have to get to the upper end to accomplish that goal of making a living as a bicycle racer, but it is certainly possible. What do I mean by making a living? Well, if you're a world champion, you're getting millions of dollars. But if you're second or third, you might be making a couple hundred thousand. If you're a pack fill guy like I was back in the day, you'd be happy with an $80,000 contract and all your meals and airfare and stuff like that.
So it has a ways to go before they start building like football stadiums or baseball. It's not going to go in that direction, I suppose.
I wouldn't say it's going to go that direction here in the United States. I would say that potentially you could see that happening in Europe and other places where cycling is more successful as a sport, as a spectator sport. You know, in Europe, cyclocross races, they fence off the venue. They have entrances. You have to buy a ticket to get in there, and they have to turn away people. Here in the United States, you put a fence up around a bike race, and you're not going to get anybody to come pay you a fee to come watch a bike race. Mm-hmm. It's just a different mm-hmm. mindset. And again, I'm going to try to really keep this as positive as I can, but in America, the bicycle's looked to as a toy. It's looked at as a toy that kids ride when they're young. And then it's off to get in your car and your driver's license.
Yeah. Well, every high school kid, when I was growing up anyway, dreams of, you know, that's how you get out of the house and away from your parents and out on a date.
Right.
So the car is quite compelling, huh?
But, I bet in Denmark those kids go out on bike dates.
Yeah, I bet they do. What's to stop them? From any age, they don't have to wait to qualify for a license. Yeah. Isn't that something? So, bike racing. How about you're working with schools today, Mike?
I'm not doing that so much anymore, Frank. Yeah. Honestly, I had been the coach of the Dunn Middle School mountain bike team while my daughter and my son were at Dunn Middle School. We had a little small team of six riders. And then COVID hit, and I kept my kids riding off, you know, unofficially, because, you know, 6-7 feet apart, you know, we're not huddled in big groups. It was cool to mm-hmm. keep the kids riding. Mm-hmm. Coming out of COVID, another local team that was based at our local high school here decided not to continue. Mm. And so then I formed the San Ynez Valley Composite Mountain Bike Team. And our first year we had 14 kids. Our second year we saw a bunch of kids that were middle school racers transition to high school and become not so enamored with the sport, unfortunately. And my numbers dwindled down to 5 kids last year.
Oh, that's tough, huh?
It's tough. And we can delve into why that is in a minute. And then my son came to me this summer and said, "Dad, hey, this racing thing's not for me. But I love riding my bike. I'm always going to continue to ride my bike. Don't worry about that. But I don't like this racing thing." And then it just clicked in my brain. You know, the community that I live in here in the San Ynez Valley it's not very conducive to public trails. There aren't any public trails that we can mountain bike on besides the trails that we've built at Kachuma Lake recently. And the Route to Trails off of Paradise Road. But here in the San Ynez Valley, there's nowhere for kids really to grow up riding bicycles.
Oh, that's a terrible shame, because how would you describe where we are? We're in like mountainous paradise here.
We are in a very beautiful green coastal valley for the most part. Turns brown during the summer, of course, but very beautiful rolling hills. We have one road called Refugio Road, which is a dirt road that goes up to the top of Camino Cielo. We have Gaviota Peak, which is again is a 2.5 mile straight up climb to Camino Cielo. There just isn't anywhere for us to ride here, unfortunately, because it's all private property. And while in other communities you see agreements between private property owners and municipalities or governments and county organizations to create public trails, here in the San Ynez Valley, there just seems to be no traction for that.
That's a shame. Huh?
So if there's nowhere to ride, the kids don't grow up riding, so I don't have kids to recruit to the mountain bike team. So I just decided, you know what, I'm going to take those energies that I'm putting into trying to get more kids on bikes here, going to stop beating my head against a brick wall, and I'm going to take those energies and just do what I can do in other ways to get more people on bikes. And the best way that I've found to do that recently is to dump all my energy into being a race announcer.
Good for you. So, Mike, let's go back in time.
Okay.
When did all this start for you? Where did you grow up? Where were you first riding your bike?
Well, I grew up right here in the San Ynez Valley over in Buellton at 450 Central Avenue. I attended Haneda Elementary School and the San Ynez Valley High School. Cycling for me started really just riding around my neighborhood. You know, to get to school, we had to used to have to cross through an alfalfa field, which is now all houses. But there is a trail that went from 2nd Street, Central Avenue, all the way over to Haneda Elementary. The kids and I used to build jumps and stuff out there, and it was a great time. You know, single digits, we're talking, you know, like 2nd, 3rd, 4th grade. And that was a great time. And then I got into a little bit of a throttle twist.
Did you ever have training wheels, Mike, on your bike? Do you remember that?
You know what? It's funny you should mention that. I did not have training wheels on my bike. My godfather lived right around the corner, and his grandson, Dwayne Mogensen, taught me how to ride a bicycle riding around a bank building in downtown Buellton around the parking lot right there. And I was told I crashed a couple times, a couple tears here and there. But half hour later, I was riding a bike with no training wheels. So
and never looked back.
And never looked back. Yeah. You know, when I was 11, I was into motorcycles. And growing up in Buellton in the 70s and in the 80s, you know, it was a one flashing red light town. It didn't have any stoplights. We used to wheelie our motorcycles down the Avenue of Flags, right through the red flashing light at 246, down to the San Ynez River and ride our bikes between Solvang and Buellton and off towards Lompoc and back. One day I got in an accident. I had a head-on collision with another rider. Ooh. And he was on a what was known as an ATV, a three-wheeled ATV, and I was on a RM125, a Suzuki RM125 dirt bike. I flew through the air upon impact and landed in an abandoned car. My left hip dislocated, or my left femur, I should say, dislocated out of my left hip. Horrible pain.
Ouch.
It popped back in. Went to get it diagnosed, and it turned out I had I had basically a birth defect in my left femur. It was growing at the completely wrong angle.
Oh.
Had it gone unchecked, it would have deformed my hip socket and made me, you know, given me a pretty severe problem later on in life.
Walking, limping,
jeez. Stuff like that. So
that turned out to have a silver lining?
Well, it certainly did. Local orthopedic surgeon, Melvin Kasberg, who's a former MASH doctor in Vietnam and was the Rams orthopedic surgeon, the LA Rams orthopedic surgeon for a time. He basically went in there, realigned, cut the ball off the femur, realigned it, installed a plate and a pin and two screws, and corrected the problem. And then part of my physical therapy was riding a Schwinn Aerodyne bike in my mom's garage.
Stationary
bike. Yeah.
And
then that just progressed into a year later, less than a year later, I'm doing the Solvang Century on a mountain bike with slick tires.
And was that the end of your motorcycle career? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No motorcycle career after that. I haven't really touched one since. I do need to give a little shout out. I skipped a little something to someone I know that we both know really well. Before I had my hip diagnosis, while I was in Cub Scouts, there was a man by the name of John Siegel Baitner. He was my third grade teacher, and he was our Cub Scout master here in Buellton, Cub Scout Troop 42. And he really introduced me to cycling first. I remember doing the Cub Scouts bike-a-thon, where you had to go out and get pledges from the community for, you know, however, per mile or put a cap on it, whatever. And our route was riding from McDonald's on McMurray Road in Buellton to the end of McMurray Road by Valley Tool Rental and then back. That was our 1.5 mile route that we did. I ended up doing it 85 times for 100 miles and raised the most money of all the other scouts and won a Schwinn varsity bicycle.
Wow.
From Max Bike Shop in Santa Barbara.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's John doing today?
John is doing, what is the name? We're going to edit this, right?
Well, yeah.
I just saw something on Instagram about it earlier today that John, you know, John's riding those three-wheel bikes around taking senior citizens out.
What? A trishaw, not a rickshaw, a trishaw.
A trishaw. But what is the name of his nonprofit?
Cycling
Without Age. That's what it is, yes. So John Siegel Baitner was a big influence in my life as a cyclist, for sure.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't connect with him, but they've got a whole support system in Santa Barbara for Cycling Without Age, and they've got several of these trishaws around town, usually stashed at some of the senior homes.
Right.
And I was thinking I wanted to use one as like a rolling studio to roll down State Street. And you can picture you sitting there, and I've got a GoPro on it, and I've got, at the last minute, I pulled out my cell phone. Anyway, that was lots of fun.
And, yeah.
It was nice to connect with that crowd again. And you see, I joked as I was anticipating it. It took me a couple of weeks to line up schedules. So I had all this time to think about it and talk about it, riding the trishaw as a passenger. And I kept saying to myself and anyone who would listen, I didn't want to wait till I was 80 for a ride on the trishaw. Didn't have to.
Well, you're probably going to get another one when you're 80, right?
Yeah, I'll get another one when I'm 80.
No, I took a ride in that too. John brought one up for the Open Streets event that happened on the Avenue of Flags this past May. And we did a lap on my Avenue of Flags race course out there. It was kind of fun.
Yeah. Let's change gears and talk about bicycle tourism here in the Valley, Mike.
I'll try to...
Bicycle tourism.
Yes, there is.
About that? Amgen Tour used to come through here. Maybe they still do.
No, the Amgen Tour of California is long and done and dusted. It's not coming back, unfortunately.
Oh, it's not coming back.
No. A lot of politics around shutting down streets for bicycle races in California. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad. It was a great run. Solvang had four years here, I believe, of the time trial stage, which was one of the most popular stages of the Tour of California. Today, people still come to Solvang to ride their bicycle based on remembering the Amgen Tour of California coming here. We have several different touring companies bring riders here to enjoy the picturesque scenery of the San Ynez Valley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you're so inclined, you can find one of these touring companies and they'll send you out, lead you around.
They will. There's both local companies and there's nationally based companies that have packages for the Valley as well.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that all the riders enjoy riding are really pothole ridden roads in Santa Barbara County.
That's always been an issue, hasn't it? The road conditions.
It is. It's something that's been on my mind for a very long time. And, you know, usually what happens is where roads are traveled frequently, you know, the wheel lanes are the ones that fall apart. That's where we get the potholes and stuff like that. And of course, all our roads out here are rural roads for the most part, with no bike lane easement on the side or consideration given to that. I've been to a lot of places where people ride bicycles and where they go to ride bicycles. And I've seen infrastructure in other communities that are just as complicated as the San Ynez Valley. And if places like Crested Butte, Colorado can build a bike path from its town to its ski resort in the middle of the Rocky Mountains,
we should be able to as well. Huh?
We should be able to build a bicycle path from Buellton to Kachuma Lake.
Mike, you know so many people in this bicycle racing universe here. They look up to you, many of them. Who do you look up to? Who are some of your heroes, people who have inspired you?
Well, going way back, I mean, I'm a product of the 1983, 1988 era where, you know, Greg LeMond winning, you know, coming up in the ranks. The Olympic movement, Alexi Grewal winning the Olympic road race in Mission Viejo, which I had the privilege of actually witnessing in person as a little kid. So I would say, you know, watching Greg LeMond win the 86 Tour de France and then getting shot by his brother-in-law and then coming back and winning the Tour two more times. When I was a young kid, that was a lot of motivation.
He got shot by his brother-in-law. I forgot that part.
Yeah, he got shot by his brother-in-law in Marin County on a hunting excursion. And to this day, he still has like 28 pellets or something in the lining of his heart.
Oh.
But and then there's, you know, again, back to that era when I was just formulating my life as a bicycle rider. You know, there was the whole Team 7-Eleven. They used to train in Santa Barbara at the El Parado. Which is no longer the El Parado, but and all of us cyclists would used to just wait for them for autographs. And, you know, living here in the San Ynez Valley, I became knowledgeable of what they used to do for training rides. So I would, as a 13-year-old kid, 14-year-old kid, I would get kitted up and ride out Alisal Road right here and wait for Team 7-Eleven to come riding by Nahoe Falls Park. And I'd hop in. And the first time I'd hop on the back of the group of these pro racers that I've watched racing the Tour de France, you know. And day one, I was told by the team manager that I could just hang out at the back, but don't rotate through. If any of the riders come back to talk to you, talk to them, but just don't rotate through, kid. Okay. Rotating through means taking my turn in the echelon to rotate through. Okay. That was cool. So I rode with them through the valley, and that was day one. And then day two, the next day, I was allowed to rotate through a little bit and met all the riders. You know, Davis Finney, Ron Kiefel, Chris Carmichael. It was a great time. Day three, I rode all the way to Los Alamos with them. And then I got an invite to come hang out at the San Luis Obispo Criterium that weekend. And to this day, I mean, Chris Carmichael and I are good friends.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Talk to him often.
Wow.
Ride with him occasionally, too.
Wow. As I prepared for this, I kept thinking, I looked up some like famous people, Howard Cosell, Chick Hearn, Vin Scully. You're a Dodgers fan, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have a Vin Scully story. My family and I were attending a Dodger game. My kids were young. And another announcer, a friend of mine from Santa Barbara, you may know him. His name is Brad Jay. Brad Jay is a multi-time Olympic announcer and does the Red Bull Rampage and things like that. And he was actually the Dodger Stadium MC at that point in his career. So he was the guy,
wow,
you know, announcing the players. Next up the bat, Barry Bonds, boom, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so Brad got us in to meet Vin Scully. And it's one of my valued memories. Wish I could find the phone that has the photos of that day on there. Oh, but
yeah, you haven't, huh? Mm-hmm.
So I met Vin Scully.
Yeah.
Other announcers that I've met from the pro ranks. I've met Gary Thorne. Gary Thorne actually lives here in Solvang. You know, Gary Thorne announced for... He announced for the New York Mets. I think he's still announcing for the Mets occasionally as like, you know, backup. He's pretty much retired. He teaches at the Walter Cronkite Journalism School at the University of Arizona. He's a good dude. Huh. And I've, you know, and there's other announcers that I've actually listened to on YouTube, so I can pick up some tips here and there.
What would be an example of a tip or something that would appeal to you?
Oh, just the way someone's describing the racing action. You know, I it's hard for me to pull stuff out in the moment like this, but I enjoy listening to what other announcers do so that I can just become better. You know, I don't say that I'm acquiring their sayings or anything. I think there's a sense of what am I trying to say? I just learn a lot when I listen to other announcers. Even when I'm working an event with like my friend Josh from Colorado, Josh Mall, he and I, we've worked several races together, Sea Otter and USA Cycling Nationals, and I learn a lot from Josh, just seeing his mannerisms and the way he carries himself on the stage and stuff, and the confidence that he has and what he's saying over the PA system, that it's absolutely correct. And yeah, it's fun, mm-hmm, evolving as a race announcer, which I get better every time I do it.
I'll bet. Do you have like a classic Mike Hecker beginning, middle, or ending kind of commentary?
I can't say that I do, Frank. No, I mean, really, again, what it is, it's about presenting, carrying the passion across in the microphone. I mean, as I've announced nationals recently, I have had the privilege to announce national championships for a good friend of mine, Tinker Juarez. I saw him win. I called his victory at the National Mountain Bike Championships in Pennsylvania earlier this summer, and I called his victory at the Marathon Mountain Bike National Championships in Alabama recently. I really get a lot of pump out of when I announce some of my Southern California people who I see all the time at SoCal League races or Team Big Bear races or any other event in Southern California. When I see them performing on a national stage and I know that they're doing well, I really get hyped up for that. Mm-hmm. And I try to, it's so funny, my USA Cycling friends give me a little bit of grief. Whenever there's a Southern California rider coming across the line at nationals and Hecker's on the mic, you know that person's where that person's from, because I get amped, you know, especially when these kids who are racing national championships win a national. I mean, that's something I strive for when I was a kid. The closest I ever got was I got a silver medal in 1992 at Mammoth.
Huh.
You know.
How about advice for younger people, Mike? They're maybe just getting started with racing. There's probably lots of ups and downs as you get started. What helped you persist and keep going?
Well, I think I was a little unique in that I basically... I couldn't really do another sport because of my leg, right? My hip. I was always the last kid to get cut on the baseball team or the basketball team. So I was just, I,
I enjoyed cycling because it was my outlet, and it allowed me to grab that competitive spirit that I couldn't get any other way. I could do it on the bicycle. But for kids nowadays who are taking up the sport of cycling, I would just say, only really do it if you love doing it. That's the first and foremost, most important thing. Don't do it because mom and dad want you to be a bike racer. I get all emotional because my kids have both decided that they don't want to be a bike racer, and that's totally fine. My daughter's an awesome thespian. She's in the theater. She's excelling at that. My son's pursuing film. That's great. But for kids who want to be bike racers, you just got to do it because you love to do it. And then get a good coach. Follow their direction. But keep your education as just as important as your athletic endeavors. I say that from experience. I am a 55-year-old former bike racer, former race director, current race announcer, former cycling coach, and I own a tree care service.
It all makes sense to me, Mike.
Right. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
So my advice to kids is only do it if you love racing bikes, and then don't lose sight, because education's more important than racing your bicycle. You can do both. You don't have to do just one or the other. My end all goal with this announcing is I'd love to be able to be involved somehow with the Olympics coming up, the 28 Olympics in LA. It'd be really, really a cool thing for me to even just be a crowd announcer. You know, I'm not talking about being a TV personality, but just be the guy announcing the race to the crowd that's on hand. That'd be a cool thing to be part of. And we'll see if I can get there. Baby steps. But I'm working for some big companies now, and I'm fortunate. And I work for USA Cycling, and I work for Lifetime, who own the Leadville Racing Series. I've done the Tahoe Trail 100 for them, and Sea Otter they own as well. So my foot's in the door with some good companies, and if I can just keep doing a good job every time they bring me out, then, you know, the sky's the limit.
Well, that's a wrap, Mike. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really looked forward to it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you. And like I said, it's great to see you. And thanks for the opportunity. Everyone, go out there and ride your bike today, okay?
Well, that is a wrap. That's my interview with Mike Hecker. Did that this month of November 2023 in Solvang, California. I want to give a shout out to the Craft House, the restaurant at the Cork Hotel, who were very kind and accommodated me in providing a quiet space, mostly quiet, where Mike and I could sit down and talk it all out. Thank you to the Craft House at Cork. I hope you will return. Santa Barbara Cyclists, come by, check out the podcasts. Well, that'll do it for today. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.